This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We're coming up to 7:19 in the morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Khoo Soo Chuang and Tan Chen Li. First, to mark World Earth Day today, we're looking at sustainable investing trends. Now, the adoption of environment, sustainability and governance, or ESG investing in Malaysia, took a significant turn in 2018. That year, EPF, Kuop and Khazanah National became signatories of the UN Principles for Responsible Investment, demonstrating their commitment to responsible investments to advocate for a more sustainable financial system.
Signatories of UN-supported PRI are required to implement the six principles for responsible investing, which include embedding ESG considerations into investment analysis and decision-making processes, as well as seeking appropriate ESG disclosures from investee companies. ESG investing is projected to grow significantly, and as estimated by Bloomberg Intelligence in February this year, global asset size is set to balloon to $50 trillion by 2025.
So what's the ESG investing landscape in Malaysia, and are we seeing a similar growth trend here? For some thoughts on this, we have on the line with us Dr. Lim Kim Hua. He's the founder and CEO of Create Capital. Dr. Lim, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Now, ESG investing is relatively new in Malaysia. How much awareness do you think there is among Malaysian businesses about the benefits of adapting to ESG standards or to provide some form of reporting?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the call. The first step is, of course, for the corporate to decide whether to embrace ESG or not. So regulations and rules aside, in today's society, ESG is expected from a socially responsible corporate. So if the corporate takes it seriously, then there are three aspects to really adapt to. The first one is, of course, to review your value chain and your business practices. The second is to capture ESG data and report it in a consistent manner for the major data providers. The third is, of course, managing your own assets and funds in an ESG manner. So we focus on the last point, which is to help corporates, individuals, foundations, etc., manage funds in a sustainable manner without compromising returns. We leverage on AI and technology to provide us with the agility to deliver bespoke services and even for small amounts. So for example, one can create a portfolio to be E, S or G, or aligned to one of the 17 UN Sustainable Development Goals.
Yeah, Dr. Lim, so with ESG investing still at a nascent stage, are there reliable scorecards that can be relied on?
Getting reliable ESG data is important. For us, we adopt one of the global providers for its coverage, reliability, and historical data. This is because we run back tests to show how a strategy will have performed in the past. For other users, perhaps other providers may make more economic sense and in terms of suitability for its coverage. But getting data is only one aspect to it. Unless one invests in a single stock, what is more important is actually how to create a sustainable portfolio without sacrificing returns. So one needs to combine sustainability scores, data, ratings with how you manage risk and return, and to report sustainability and its impact all at the same time. And this is what Create focuses on.
So is the FTSE4Good Bursa Malaysia Index the only source, or is there other sources that we can rely on?
In Malaysia, certainly the FTSE, the FTSE4Good is one of the key sources, but data providers rank or measure data providers such as Refinitiv, Sustainalytics, Bloomberg, etc. They collect data for these corporates more than just the constituents of the FTSE4Good. So what we have seen in cases is that, say for example, in November 2021, Dyson terminated its Malaysian supplier for its labor practices, and the latter's share price sank. So it is not accurate that just that focusing on ESG stocks will automatically make the portfolio perform well. But doing it in a screening way, such as removing certain stocks from your universe because it is not in the right industry, does not add value in the long term. And this is a study shown by Schroders. So what really needs to be done is to maximize sustainability, to integrate sustainability into the portfolio construction, consistent with what you have mentioned at the start of the talk, which is the six principles of PRI. how do you actually maximize returns and sustainability, meaning both, and simultaneously minimize your risk and costs? So this is a challenge that many practitioners face.
Yeah, exactly. Because there are costs with getting compliant and cleaning up the value chain, Dr. Lim. Are the returns in ESG compliant companies appropriate for the amount of costs and time involved in doing all those compliance issues?
One has to take into account that such compliance is part and parcel of the cost of doing business. I mean, we take the example of Dyson terminating its Malaysian supplier. The cost of not doing so is actually very high. So what needs to be also be balanced is, of course, how to actually embrace, that's why it comes back to my first point, is how to actually embrace sustainability throughout your whole value chain and your business practices. It ought to be something that it is good for you, good for your stakeholders, as well as good for your shareholders and your reputation. And we increasingly show that there's a big separation between ESG compliant and ESG good stocks versus those that are not so. But to do such type of portfolio construction, we would advocate portfolio optimization to really find a unique and an optimal composition. And from what we have studied is that we find that ESG maximized strategies tend to outperform a balanced strategy by 2 to 6% per annum. And from a reporting perspective, on its impacts perspective, the portfolio also has at least about 50% higher ESG score and adhere to more UN Sustainable Development Goals.
Yeah, so Dr. Lim, how many, in your opinion, how many listed stocks in Malaysia are ESG compliant that are also investable? Do you think there could be an element of greenwashing in certain instances?
Greenwashing is an issue throughout the world. It's not only specific to Malaysia. So one needs to be careful, and the best way to sort of protect, to mitigate any potential greenwashing is to really and sort of increase the scope of how you actually measure quote unquote this greenwashing. For us, we measure the impact using a composite ESG score based on Refinitiv's 10 pillars and the UN 17 Sustainable Development Goals. So if the company is able to greenwash and achieve the highest score in all these 10 pillars and all the 17 UN Sustainable Development Goals, then bravo, that's great. But if the company is already achieving that, then I think it's already doing a lot of the good things, a lot of the correct things in terms of incorporating sustainability in its business practices.
We have about 1 minute left with you. Maybe very quickly, I mean, Morningstar reported the number of sustainable funds available to U.S. investors that grew 36% in 2021. I'm curious about what kind of trend that you're seeing here in Malaysia. Are we seeing similar inflows as well?
There are certainly lesser number of funds. There's a bit of chicken and egg problem. And the second one is, of course, how to actually create that sustainable portfolio. So we look forward to sort of partner with different private banks and fund managers to launch such funds. And the third is, of course, the reluctance to do so because of the cost of setting up a fund. And for that, we suggest running private mandates even for a smaller account size. And with our tech platform, it is commercially viable to do so.
Dr. Lim, thanks very much for speaking with us this morning. That was Dr. Lim Kim Hua, founder and CEO of Create Capital, weighing in on the ESG investing trend, how it's taking shape in Malaysia, and what are the things that can be done in order to boost its profile and platform.
Yeah, you know, ESG investing, right? I've got issues with it. In fact, I've got issues 24/7 about it, because there's a lot of disingenuity about the whole ESG themes. For example, do you see... You see environmentally damaging companies doing what they can to boost their scores, but without changing their underlying core issues, right? For example, if you're a property developer and you try and boost your ESG score, but you still stay in the same business of cutting down jungles and building houses on top of basically natural environments, then you are not solving the problem. It's the same thing with plantations or property companies or even banks who fund these projects, you're not changing your underlying business model. You're just papering over the cracks because you're still cutting down trees and, you know, blocking rivers.
So I guess the point is that you can't really take an ESG label at face value. Sometimes
yeah,
it's
you
worth
shouldn't, but
diving into that company a little bit more to, they may claim ESG credentials, but does that really speak to what their principles are and what their business mandate stands for? It's definitely worth investigating. But I do think that the more investors put pressure on companies to change their ways, then the more change that can be done, perhaps. So as Dr. Lim said, it is a bit of a chicken and egg situation when it comes to ESG movements of sorts. You know, who does what? Where does the cycle come from? I think we all have to play a part. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.